Welcome to another edition of Beyond the Classroom. I'm your host, David Schoenfeld. This program is produced by WWUH Radio, a community service of the University of Hartford. You may hear it in Connecticut on the stations of WWUH West Hartford, WAPJ Torrington, WDJW Summers, and WWEB Wallingford. Join me as members of the faculty and staff of the University of Hartford share information about their wide-ranging research activities and about their work on behalf of the university and the community at large. I recorded the following interview with Dr. John Feierabend, Professor of Music Education at the Hart School of the University of Hartford, on January 6, 2014. We talked for an hour, and I have divided our conversation into two parts for broadcast. Let's listen now to the first part of our conversation. Today I'm joined in the studio by John Feierabend, one of the leading authorities on music and movement development. John is a professor of music in the Hart School at the University of Hartford and currently the director of the Music Education Division at Hart. He is committed to collecting, preserving, and teaching the diverse folk music of our country and using that folk music as a bridge to help children understand and enjoy classical music. John, welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome to Beyond the Classroom. As we record this interview, it's January, and I'm guessing that you're in between semesters at this point.
Right. This is winter break.
Now, apart from, I'm sure, much-needed rest and relaxation, you're probably involved in some projects that have been back-burnered for a while.
I always have a number of projects going at some level or another. Just yesterday, my wife and I have finished a video for educational purposes, and we spent most of the day, 6 or 7 hours, editing the video and figuring out which moments should be deleted and shifting around the sequence of the video. So there's that video. There's another video that is still in rough cut that we have to still get to edit. I'm regularly writing pedagogical books and assembling collections for educational purposes. I like to research folk music and classical music that serves a particular purpose and then organize a book around that purpose. For example, I have a book about how the beat develops. And so I look for all the folk games that children have done in the past that require children to move on the beat and then organize them according to these songs require the children to move on the beat in a stationary way, tapping or clapping. These activities in the book are songs and games that children have played where they have to move on the beat, so they would be walking or dancing on the beat. I organize them by these songs keep a beat in groups of twos. These songs keep a beat in groups of threes, so that a teacher can go to a book like that and say, what am I working on to develop in my young children in a classroom, and what are some resources I can turn to? So I try to find and research the resources and then organize them in a coherent way that make it easy for teachers to have good material that can help develop children in a variety of ways. Beat is just one of them. Then there are other collections that help children learn to use their singing voice. And I find songs that ask them to sing little short fragments and then songs that require more long-term memory. I organize the songs by how many different tones are in each song. And then the teacher, again, can go to a resource like that book and find what they're looking for. And hopefully I've provided them with authentic folk music, which is a thread in everything I do, that we're trying to teach the music of our country to its people and preserve it with the goal of building community. And all the books and activities that I'm working on, the goal is that the children that are being taught using these materials might remember these songs when they're adults, and hopefully their children will also learn these songs, and then they can sing together. Connecting generations through folk music is a thread in everything that I do, building community through folk music.
Excellent. Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about that. When you're in teaching mode during the semesters, what are some of the courses that you like to teach?
I'm fortunate that I have a two-semester sequence. The students that come to the university to study to be music educators will be certified by the state of Connecticut to teach music in any grade from preschool through 12th grade. So they have me for the courses on how to teach children from preschool through sixth grade. Then there will be other professors that will take on middle school and high school. Specifically, from preschool through sixth grade, I'm the person who teaches them what we call general music. Those are the classes where the children might use some simple instruments, but it's not to teach the children how to play an instrument. There's another professor that teaches that course, how to develop a band or an orchestra in an elementary school. That would be called the instrumental music education person. I'm the vocal music education person. So it's primarily using the voice through singing and through movement, various movement activities, including folk dancing, that I teach these two semester courses. In the fall semester, I teach preschool through second grade and do a lot of descriptions of how the brain develops in birth from infancy through seven-year-olds in second grade, and then what are the materials that would best produce the most maximum effect in the musical growth of the child at that age. That's a fall semester course. It's an interesting course in that the students meet with me three times a week for 2 hours. One of the times they meet, I'm lecturing or engaging them in activities so that they understand how they would do the activity. One of the 2 hour times they meet, they peer teach each other, and they're coaching them. I'll stop them and say, I think you could have done it more efficiently this way, or are you sure you're singing that in the right key, or let's try that again, doing it this way. So that's one of the times of the week. And then we're very fortunate on our campus to have the University of Hartford Magnet School. And my wife, Lily, is one of the two music teachers there. So on Fridays, the same class goes there for 2 hours, and they get to actually teach children that are either from preschool through first grade and do, in fact, what they had just done in the classroom for each other. They now get to try it out and see how children respond to their teaching. So in the fall semester, we have this great opportunity for them to learn and practice how to work with children from infancy through second grade. And then in the spring, I get them the same students again, and we continue from third grade through sixth grade, which is another type of learning. It's another type of curriculum. And again, we are lucky enough to meet 6 hours a week. 2 hours I'm lecturing, engaging them in activities. 2 hours they're teaching each other. And 2 hours we go out to Simsbury Public Schools, and they work with children in fourth, fifth, and sixth grade to see if they can evoke the same responses from the children that they were able to get each other to do earlier in the week. Those are my two primary courses. I also teach a course in teaching improvisation in the middle and high school, but it's, again, not instruments. I'm a vocal music education person, so I'm showing them how they can learn to improvise with their voice. There's another course for improvising on instruments that someone else teaches. Those are my primary classes. And over the years, this is my 27th year at the University of Hartford, I've developed the textbooks that are used in those courses. And those textbooks have been widely received across the United States and are being used in many colleges across the country, where other professors like myself that teach these courses use the books that I've developed for the courses here at the University of Hartford.
Excellent. I'm getting the sense that University of Hartford's program in music education is an outstanding one.
I think it is. It is pretty nationally and even internationally recognized as an outstanding music education program. I'm invited to speak at state conferences around the country about our programs and the books that I've written for our programs. In 2 days, I'll be going down to Florida Music Educators, and after that, I'll be in Georgia Music Educators and Ohio Music Educators. And just two or three a month, I'm on the road speaking at a state conference explaining our style of music education and what our college students are learning at the University of Hartford. Many schools don't have the research-based curriculum that we have. It's been one of our mottos in music education that it's research-based music education. So if I am explaining an activity, I can cite the research studies that have been done that will say, well, we tried it this way or this way, and when we did it this way, we got a better result when we tested the children. So I built most of the textbooks that I've written and curriculum books on studies that have been done that I've done or our doctoral students here at the University of Hartford have done or other faculty members have done or research I've read from faculty members at other universities that help guide how I build the curriculum for children so that I know that we're not just doing something because it's fun, but we're doing something because it's fun and it's been tested, and we know that it results in a better outcome in the children's learning. So yes, I think also the program here at the University of Hartford for music education has received attention because The students in the program have extensive hands-on experience with children. In most programs, to become a music educator, you wouldn't actually work with children until your final year in the program. We call that student teaching. So you would go through your 4 years of college and then spend a semester in a school someplace, learning how to apply it with students. In our four-year program, our students are with children every year of the 4 years. And the faculty are with them, as I mentioned, guiding them as they teach each other, but then also with them when they're with children. So when we meet again in the classroom, we can provide feedback. We record how they taught with the children. We can stop the tape and point out things that were happening. And so the next time the students go back with the children, they can try to repair or improve whatever they had accomplished in the previous lesson. But I don't know any other college that has a music education program where the students have such extensive time in the classroom with children. By the time our students are in their final year and they go out to student teach, they have all of that learning behind them, and they are functioning at a much higher level. We often hear from the schools where our students are student teaching that they're different than the students that come from other universities because they're so well prepared, and they have a lot of the initial humps behind them. A lot of it's management. It takes a while to figure out how to manage a group of 25 or 30 children all at one time and notice all of them and notice who's being naughty and who's being nice and how are you going to effectively teach what you're trying to teach at the same time monitoring how everyone in the classroom is behaving. And also, there are individual differences in how the students are acquiring the learning, and you want to see which children are learning easily, which children are having difficulty learning, and how do you modify for the next lesson to meet all the individual differences of the classroom. You just aren't teaching a blob of people. You're teaching a bunch of individuals. And that is what sort of unfolds over the first 3 years. As they're with the children, they gradually get a better and better handle at how to most effectively teach a group of children all at one time. And so when they student teach, the other public school teachers that are hosting them often comment on how well they manage the classroom and how attentive they are to all of the students and how well they are able to diagnose where something needs to be done in the next lesson based on some output that they saw in the previous lesson. So I think our students are very well prepared, and it's received a lot of attention. Our students are sought after when they graduate. They know that if a school district hires a music teacher from the Hart School, that they're going to get a very well-prepared teacher. And so we usually have a waiting list. Sometime in the spring, the principals and the superintendents of schools, personnel directors start calling and emailing us asking if we have any graduates. They're going to have an opening in their school this year, and they're hoping to hire somebody from the Hart School. So it's a nice position to be in. After these 27 years, I think we've created a legacy of outstanding music education, both in the community for placing our students in schools for jobs, and also across the country, as I'm invited to come and share the pedagogy that we've developed here with other states so they can do the same kinds of activities in their states as well.
Well, that's great to hear. I often ask my guests on Beyond the Classroom to talk a little bit about job prospects for graduates in their field. I was at first a little hesitant to ask you that question because I'm aware of what's happening to the arts in education across the country, but it sounds like the situation is really not that bleak for Hart graduates in music education.
No, we like to phrase it this way. All the students that graduated that were seeking jobs have found jobs in the past 5 years. I put it that way because not all the students, when they graduate, want to begin their teaching career. Some of them want to go off to get a master's degree either in education or on their performing instrument or their voice. But all the students that were seeking a job after they graduated have been successful at finding jobs because, as I say, the reputation is out there. They know that a graduate from the Hart School is going to be a good teacher. I do have this insight because I travel around the United States to so many different states that there are other states that have cut the arts in the schools more than we have here in Connecticut. Yes, it's always a concern that when there's a budget cut, it's the arts that might be cut. But I think Connecticut has managed to do a better job than most states at preserving the arts in the public schools. Most of the schools that I'm aware of, elementary schools, because that's my area, will have a person that's a specialist for music in their school, whereas in other states in the country, you see that that's dwindling. Before they disappear altogether, usually states will start cutting the amount of time the students have access to the arts. So in most places here in Connecticut, the students will have music twice a week for half an hour in an elementary school. And it's not in all schools like that. But in other parts of the country, you're starting to see that they'll have music once a week for 40 minutes or once a week for 30 minutes or even on a rotating schedule where they have it once every 10 days. Or some states have strange arrangements where the students will have music every day for 2 weeks and then not again for a year. So as they eliminate jobs in the arts or for music teachers in other states, first they scale back on the amount of time students have access to the arts. But I think here in Connecticut, we value the arts perhaps more than some of the other states do. And we've been lucky up to this point, knock on wood, that we can continue having music teachers in most elementary schools. So there should be plenty of jobs for our graduates in the future.
Well, that's great to hear. My guest today is Dr. John Feierabend, professor of music and the director of the Music Education Division at the Hart School of Music of the University of Hartford. I wanted to ask you maybe to clarify for me a question that I've never quite been sure about. There are two approaches to music education developed by European musicians. One is Karl Orff, the German, and the other is Zoltán Kodály, the Hungarian. I think you are more associated with the Kodály method.
Yes, that's right.
Could you compare and contrast those so I and so our listeners would have a better understanding of how they are similar and how they diverge, and your own take on the effectiveness of those two programs?
Yes. To make the comparison, I'm afraid we have to back up a little bit historically to tell you how they began and where they came from. The Karl Orff approach is from Germany. Karl Orff, composer, thought that students should have access to musical activities at a young age and sought ways to do it. Germany, and I have had the good fortune to go over there as an exchange professor and teach for a while, the children in elementary schools in Germany do not have music specialists like we have here in the United States. The music that is taught to children in the elementary school is either taught by their classroom teacher, if the classroom teacher has the skills to do it, or it's taught in after-school programs. Most German elementary schools end at 1 p.m., and parents can pay to have their students attend after-school programs. So the Karl Orff approach was a program that was developed for the after-school program. His idea was that there would be an organic sense of movement and voice, chanting and singing, and then that movement, he calls it body preparation, could then be applied to simple instruments, primarily xylophones that were modeled after African xylophones that one of his associates, Gunnied Keetman, brought back from a trip in Africa. The students in the Karl Orff approach would then improvise on these instruments. They would improvise or be taught patterns and ostinatos that were layered and then invited to do movement along with these improvised patterns. As that approach became discovered by American teachers, or teachers of the United States, in the late 60s, early 70s, it was adapted and modified for this country because it was now going to be taught by music specialists. And America actually developed its own brand of the Orff approach that was done in Germany. And so they have their own certification program that looks a bit different than the way the Germans originally developed the Orff approach. So in the United States, you would get certified to be an American Orff Schulwerk teacher. And if you were in Germany, you would be getting an Orff certification to do it. When I was in Germany, what I saw there in the name of Orff looked much more evocative of the student exploring and evolving musical ideas. They did an awful lot of artwork in addition to what the child would create with their voice and with their body and on instruments. In the United States, there are a few different approaches to realizing Orff's ideas, and most of it is not as child-centered in the child creating. There is certainly child creativity in the American Orff approach, but it's more about having the students develop the techniques on the instruments and being taught movements to do and being taught ostinatos to chant and being taught ostinatos to play on instruments and then layered into some kind of an ensemble experience where they were singing and playing and dancing at the same time. So that's the Orff approach. The Kodály approach comes from Hungary. Zoltán Kodály, a composer, and his friend Béla Bartók were dismayed that there was not music education in the public schools of Hungary. And this would be in the 1930s. And the general education in Hungary at the time was all taught in the public schools in German. because it was the leftover of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and so students were, all instruction was done in German. And if songs were being taught by the classroom teachers, they were German songs. Kodály and Bartók, as part of the nationalistic movement that was going on in the early 1900s, wanted the people of Hungary to know more about their own music. So they both were ethnomusicologists. They collected on wax cylinders collections of Hungarian folk songs from elderly people that still remembered them, and a group of their composing students. There was no music education program because there was no music education in the public schools. They were both professors of composition and involved their composition students in an effort to create something for the schools. So it was based on these Hungarian folk songs that were collected. They were organized from simple to complex. And then Kodály invited some of these composition students to go out and observe methods that were being used in other countries for teaching music education. In Germany, there was a fellow named Fritz Juda that was the primary influence for what evolved later on in Hungary as the Kodály approach. But even that was based on an English approach that John Kerwin had developed 50 years earlier. So in Hungary, it became more about not just students using their voice and their body and instruments in an organic way, layering ostinatos, but to become musically literate. The idea was that eventually, in Kodály's idea, that all people could learn to read and write notation the way they can read and write their own language, and that you didn't need to study an instrument to do it any more than you can read without knowing how to type, and you can know how to read notation and hear it in your head or sing what you see without having to have an instrument to play it. Kodály and Bartók both talked about how many people study an instrument to learn music, and they study it by interpreting notation by moving their fingers when they see the notation, but not really knowing what it's going to sound like until after they've played it. One of my favorite quotes from Kodály was, "We should express music through instruments, not use instruments to hear music." So the idea, the Kodály approach, is that it's a vocal approach. Instruments are possibly added much later. One of his other quotes is, "We should not even go near an instrument until a person can read and write notation and understand what it sounds like when they see it." So I'd say Orff, if you were going to generalize, Orff has a lot more instrumental experiences early on in the instruments, particularly xylophones and percussion instruments, are used as an extension of exploring music, whereas in the Kodály approach, one has to understand how to read and write notation before an instrument comes in. It's much more sequential, and I think teachers that are attracted to one or the other methods, it almost demonstrates a certain preference in their teaching style, whereas the Orff approach, as an after-school program in Germany, children from any age could arrive into the after-school program and participate almost immediately in some kind of a musical experience without having to have years of study. In the Kodály approach, it was expected that each year the students would evolve to another layer, another layer, another layer, so that after 3 or 4 years, there was a certain proficiency expected from children. So by 4th or 5th or 6th grade, a student in a Kodály approach can actually read music, like they can read their own language. But the students in an Orff approach, they would minimally be able to read music, but they would have had many independent experiences participating with the music. So I hope that helps explain the differences between the two. The Kodály approach came to the United States in the late 60s and early 70s, just about the time the Orff approach did. And those teachers that were interested in a sequential curriculum that could develop musical skills to higher and higher levels migrated to the Kodály approach. And those that preferred to have independent activities that were easily accessible, where students could have satisfying experiences in music without having to have years of practice, migrated to the Orff approach.
And I gather you personally are more associated with the Kodály approach.
Yes, and more so than you might imagine, because I was the president of the National Kodály Association for a while. And in 1993, here on this campus, we hosted the International Kodály Conference. There were 16 countries represented, and a little over 800 people were here to share what's going on in the name of Kodály around the world. And I've attended many of the international Kodály conferences in other countries, in Italy and Greece and Spain, Belgium, Australia. And it's interesting to see what's going on in other countries in the name of Kodály. Each country has to make some kind of modification. In Hungary, Kodály and Bartók collected Hungarian folk songs and organized them from simple to complex. But Each country has to do that work themselves. As we do it in the United States, part of my life's work had been to equally gather folk songs and organize them from simple to complex, but songs that are based mostly in English. We are a culturally diverse country, but we do all speak English. And so we have to start with a common literature. So we start with the literature that's based on the language that we all can speak. And then if you're in a particular area of the country, further in Texas or New Mexico, where there's more Spanish-speaking people, you would balance that. You would have more Spanish-speaking songs added to the curriculum as well. But I guess in northern Vermont or Louisiana, you might have more French songs. And it's appropriate that you would try to find the culture of the people and mix it in with the English-American folk songs. But again, in the Kodai approach, each country in Japan, they had to organize Japanese folk songs from simple to complex. And in Germany, there was actually a Kodai chapter in Germany. They have to organize German folk songs from simple to complex. And that's what I've done in my work as well. I've made enough modifications in over my lifetime based on research studies that I and others have done that I've sort of, what I would say, become a second generation Kodai professor or Kodai educator. The way I was taught Kodai in the 60s and 70s, I've sort of moved further along and added things and changed things as I've discovered certain things from research that said, well, it would be better if we did this way instead of that way. So I guess now I'm not even sure, while I can see that I'm rooted in the Kodai approach, I probably wouldn't say any longer that I'm teaching the Hungarian Kodai approach. I'm teaching some second or possibly now third generation after the original Hungarian Kodai approach. Mm.
Do you advocate a blending of the ORF and Kodai approaches for use in this country, or do you feel that the Kodai is really better all in all?
That's a hard call again, because a different teaching style lends itself to a different approach. I think building the sequential curriculum around a Kodai-like curriculum makes a very strong, solid core curriculum, and you can always add ORF activities to it where it's appropriate. You can't really add Kodai activities to an ORF approach. You can add ORF activities to a Kodai approach, but the ORF activities are independently musically satisfying experiences that are not necessarily built on becoming more and more complex, whereas they are in Kodai. So in my own teaching, my adaption of Kodai, now I call conversational solfege. My books are called Conversational Solfege for teaching notation and literacy to children. And along the way, I will at a certain level in my books, I will add ORF activities. Once they are learning the notation at a particular level, I'll say, this would be a good time to apply this to a xylophone, or this would be a good time to apply this to a series of melodic or rhythmic ostinati. So it's possible to integrate the two. And I guess you could do a primary ORF approach and do just a little smattering of beginning Kodai, but it would not go very far in the Kodai approach after a while, because you'd have to be developing higher and higher levels of literacy to really be teaching a Kodai approach.
Yes, that's very clear. I understand now that the Kodai is a structured sequential approach, much more so than the ORF approach.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
This has been the first part of a conversation that I had on January 6th, 2014 with John Feierabend, professor of music education at the Hart School of the University of Hartford. You can hear the conclusion of this conversation on my next program. Beyond the Classroom airs weekly at this time on the stations of WWUH West Hartford, WAPJ Torrington, WDJW Summers, and WWEB Wallingford. WWUH Radio broadcasts as a service of the University of Hartford, locally at 91.3 FM and worldwide at wwuh.org. For more information on this program, visit wwuh.org and search on Beyond the Classroom. To listen to this program again, or to podcasts of any others in this series, please visit hartford.edu/news/podcasts. I'm your host, David Schoenfeld, thanking you for listening and hoping you'll join me for the next edition of Beyond the Classroom.